A reading from the book of Exodus. On the third new moon after the Israelites had gone out of the land of Egypt, on that very day, they came into the wilderness of Sinai. They had journeyed from Rephidim, entered the wilderness of Sinai, and camped in the wilderness. Israel camped there in front of the mountain. Then Moses went up to God. The Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the Israelites, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possessions out of all the peoples. Indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. These are the words that you shall speak to the Israelites." So Moses came, summoned the elders of the people, and set before them all these words that the Lord had commanded him. The people all answered as one, "Everything that the Lord has spoken, we will do." Moses reported the words of the people to Yahweh. Then God spoke all these words. "I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol, whether in the form of anything that is in heaven above, or that is on the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, Yahweh your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and the fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not make wrongful use of the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not acquit anyone who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You shall not do any work, you, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, or the alien resident in your towns. For in 6 days, Yahweh made heaven and earth, the sea and all that is in them, but rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and consecrated it. Honor your father and your mother, so that your days may be long in the land that Yahweh your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, or male or female slave, or ox, or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The Lord be with you.
And also with you.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, according to Matthew. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter, will pass from the law until it is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. The Gospel of Christ.
Last week, we got into the book of Exodus and talked specifically about the story of the Exodus. And there are two things that I mentioned last week that I'd like to remind you of again really quickly. First of all, we heard about how Israel was delivered from slavery in Egypt through the telling of an incredible and fantastic story of 10 plagues that were brought against Egypt. And then Israel was able to cross the Sea of Reeds because the water parted and stacked up on either side of them and they walked on dry ground. But then the Egyptian army came through and the waters closed over them and they were drowned. And with that, Israel was free. And one point that we had made was even though believing that that literally happened exactly the way it was told, for us, it does not need to be a literal historical event because for us, we always take it 100% metaphorically anyway. And so for us, we think about how it is that we are enslaved. And we talk about things like perhaps we're enslaved by our addictions or our attitudes, or perhaps by people or circumstances from outside of us that are having an influence on us, that are holding us back. But if we turn our attention towards the divine presence that is always with us, if we give ourselves over to the will and purpose of God, you could say, we can find ourselves leaving the slavery behind and walking into the freedom that God holds out for us. And so we saw in that episode in Israel's history that truth that we can hold on to. But we also mentioned that the story of the Exodus is not just about Israel being freed from their slavery to Egypt. You can't stop there. You have to include the second part of the story, which is how Israel came from Egypt to Mount Sinai to receive the Torah, to receive what's often called the law of God, the Ten Commandments and everything else. And that's what we're going to get into in today's sermon. And so we picked up the story in Exodus chapter 19, and there we are told that after a period of time after crossing the Sea of Reeds, the people of Israel found themselves at the foot of Mount Sinai. Now, Mount Sinai is referred to in the Bible by two names. It's Sinai, and it's also known as Mount Horeb. And where we first encountered it being called Mount Horeb was actually back in Exodus chapter 3, when Moses was out taking care of the sheep in the land of Midian, and he encountered this phenomenon that we call the burning bush. Really, it was a bush that looked like it was burning but was never consumed. This episode happened at Mount Horeb, also known as Mount Sinai. And there, that is where Moses heard the voice of God from the burning bush, and God said, "My name is Yahweh. This is the name by which I shall be known to the Israelites." So now here it is, several decades later, and Israel, maybe not decades, maybe not quite that long, but anyway, Israel has now come from Egypt and made it to the same place where Moses had that experience. So here they are at the foot of Mount Sinai, the foot of Mount Horeb, and Moses goes up onto the top of Mount Sinai, and it said that he spends 40 days up there. Well, 40 days, 40 is one of those important numbers in the scriptures. It could have been more, it could have been less, but the point is that he went up there by himself to spend time in the presence of God, in the presence of Yahweh. And while he is up there, he is given the Torah. Now, the word Torah, as I said, is often referred to as the law of God, but however, that's not the best term for it, though certainly the Torah contains laws. The word Torah itself is better translated as instruction or teaching. This is the guidance that is being given to Israel from Yahweh. Now, as I said, it certainly contains laws, and we heard today that it begins with the recitation of the Ten Commandments, but if you were to talk to any Jewish person today about how many laws there are in the Torah, they would tell you that it's 613. And these 613 laws are given to Israel in two installments, you could say. Here in Exodus 20 and following, and into Leviticus, while they are at Mount Sinai, they are given a bunch of the laws that become part of the Torah. Then from there, they go off to the Promised Land, and as they're about to consider going in to take Canaan and to take the Promised Land, they chicken out, and God is frustrated with them, and so he says, "That's fine, then you can go wander around in the wilderness for 40 years. That's what the book of Numbers is about. And there, they get more laws that are meant to be added to what they are already received. So there's the two installments to make up the Torah. Well, then after those 40 years of wandering, they finally make their way to the border of Canaan again. And before they go in to take the land, Moses said, all right, y'all are a new generation. Let me tell you again what the law is. And he recites the entire Torah to them a second time in the book of Deuteronomy. In fact, that's what the word Deuteronomy means. It means second law. And so you'll find the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, like we heard, but also in Deuteronomy chapter 5, if I remember correctly, because they get repeated for that purpose. So anyway, the Torah, the instruction of Yahweh to the people, contain a whole bunch of laws that they are meant to follow as well. Now, how this happens, according to how the text is written, we are to understand that Moses went up there and spent those 40 days, and during that time, he simply received from Yahweh the laws that Yahweh intended Israel to follow. Now, for those of you that saw the old Cecil B. DeMille film with Charlton Heston as Moses, if you remember the scene where that happened, if I remember correctly, you could see the little slate of rock right there, and then this lightning comes out from the rock and begins to inscribe the Ten Commandments right before your very eyes. And it's clear that the way that the movie represented it, it was understood that Moses had nothing to do with this. It was 100% God providing the law, and all Moses had to do was take the tablets down the mountain and give it to Israel. I mean, that is how it is written. It's 100% God giving it to Yahweh, giving it to Moses. Moses delivers the laws. Now, what is the purpose behind the giving of this Torah in the first place? Well, it is to establish a connection, a relationship between Yahweh and Israel. It isn't just, here are the rules. It's instead, I have an intention and a purpose for you, and we are in relationship together, and these are what is going to characterize that relationship. Now, what makes me say that? Well, that's what basically is said in Exodus chapter 19, when Donna was first reading the first part of the reading this morning. Moses went up to God, Yahweh called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to Israel. And so what does God say? He says, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. Now, therefore, if you obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession out of all the peoples. And so right from the start, Yahweh is making a covenant with the people of Israel. He's establishing how they are going to be in relationship together. This happens to be the third covenant we're introduced to in the scriptures, by the way. There's two others. The first one is the Noahic or the Noahide covenant, which is what God had to say to Noah after the flood. And then there's the Abrahamic covenant, which is what God had to say to Abraham. And both the Noahic covenant and the Abrahamic covenant are unilateral in nature. What that means is God simply said to Noah, here's what I'm doing. I'm never going to flood the earth again. He said to Abraham, you're going to have a son, you're going to be a nation, you're going to have a land, and through you, all the nations of the world are going to be blessed. And God's just saying that's going to happen. There is no reciprocal response necessary on behalf of Noah or Abraham. God is simply saying, here's what's going to happen. But with this covenant, known as the Mosaic covenant, because Moses is the one carrying it, this is a bilateral covenant. There is a part that both parties have to play. And so God introduces this by saying, you remember that I just rescued you from slavery, right? You know, you were slaves in Egypt and I saved you. Okay, I've done my part. Now, if you obey the commands I'm going to give you, you will be my treasured possession. And the idea is that this working out is conditional on Israel responding appropriately to how God has already responded to them in their crying out for deliverance from slavery. And so this covenant now has two parties involved, in relationship with an ultimate purpose. And what that interesting ultimate purpose is described further. When God says, you will be my treasured possession out of all peoples, he goes on to say, indeed, the whole earth is mine, but you shall be for me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. A holy nation is a nation that is set apart, a nation that is identified to be different from the others. You are to be to me a priestly kingdom and a holy nation. In other words, Israel has a task to perform, a role to play. Something that is priestly is something whereby somebody serves as a conduit between God and others. Kind of like even in our Anglican tradition, my role as a priest, especially when we gather around the holy table, is that as I'm praying the words of consecration over the elements, that happens that we together might come and worship God in this particular way and receive from the Lord through the bread and the wine. And so in that way, I serve as a conduit, a way of connecting us together. I'm not the one who stands between you and God, but I am the one who facilitates worship of this kind. And Israel is to be a priestly kingdom. They are to facilitate the connection between God and people as they are fulfilling what the Torah requires. May I point out that when God says, if you do this, you will be my treasured possession and you will be that kingly, that priestly kingdom and that holy nation, what that does not mean, God is not saying, I'm going to favor you and love you and the hell with everybody else. That's not what he's saying. Instead, I have called you for this role and this purpose. The reason this connection is to happen is for this to be our end result. And we're going to come back to that thought in a second. But let's talk about how the Torah is given and how we are to understand it. If we take it, as I described earlier, as being something where Moses was up there for 40 days and just receiving the Torah directly from God, and he had nothing to do with it, then what we have to conclude are a couple of things. One of them is that every word of the Torah is directly from the mouth of God and therefore must be perfect and complete and whole in every way. The second thing is that Moses spent 40 days up there For what reason? Because to get the 613 laws, you don't need a month and a half to simply receive it. If God's just writing it all down for him, why did it take so long? I mean, it only takes 40 hours to read the entire Bible, let alone the Torah. So when we look at it that way and we're thinking about this, is the Torah really 100% from the mouth of God, as it were, and all Moses did was receive it and then carry it down the mountain, then any of those 613 laws ought to be perfect and complete and without any concern at all, right? But the thing is, when we read the Torah, there are some serious challenges in those laws. And I'm not talking about the ones that say you can't have bacon for breakfast. I'm meaning ones like how he starts out in Exodus 20 in the second commandment. He says, you shall not make any idols, you shall not bow down to them. And he said, why? For I, Yahweh, your God, am a jealous God, punishing children for the iniquity of parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. That's a challenging and problematic passage. So if the dad commits idolatry, then his kids and his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren are going to have to pay for that. That's what it says. Now, sometimes it gets interpreted saying we must be careful not to start a bad habit that gets passed down from generation to generation. For example, what has often been seen is, of course, if somebody is an abusive parent, their kids often become abusers themselves and the chain continues. That's sometimes how this has been interpreted, but that's not how it's worded. He's simply saying, if you commit idolatry, I will visit judgment on your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren. Now, he does balance it out. He says, but if you obey me, you're going to have 1,000 generations of blessing, but it doesn't take away from the challenge of that sanction that is talked about. Furthermore, later on in Ezekiel, Ezekiel will say, speaking for Yahweh, why do you keep on saying this statement, the father eats sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge? What he's talking about there is this idea that if the father sins, that the son pays for it. And Ezekiel goes and says, no, that's not how it works. The one who sins is the one who has to deal with it. So if the father sins, the son doesn't have to bear the cost of that sin. And if the son sins, the father doesn't have to bear the cost. And even if it alternates between generations, the father sins, but the son doesn't, but the grandson does, the point is each individual is responsible for their own failings. That's not what it says in the second commandment. And so if the law of God came 100% from God, you'd expect that it was perfect, unless God changes his mind a bit later, or unless it's only contextual when God gives these laws, or we could solve this just by pulling out one of God's get-out-of-jail-free cards. The Lord works in mysterious ways. And we just simply have to trust that that's a good reason why that law is there. But it's not just that one. There's another law that talks about how to deal with slaves. Let's just simply accept the fact that slavery was part of the package back there. But this is what it says later on in the Torah. When a slave owner strikes a male or female slave with a rod and the slave dies immediately, the owner shall be punished. But if the slave survives a day or two, there is no punishment, for the slave is the owner's property. The word of the Lord, thanks be to God. Do you get the picture there? If you beat your slave so badly that you've killed him right there, you're going to get punished. But if you beat him up so badly he only dies 2 days later, well, then it's okay, because he's your property anyhow. Really? There's another way of looking at how the Torah came to be. If we go from 100% divine, some hold a view that's 100% human. And what they're saying is that how the Torah came to be, because remember, this is being compiled in 1000 BCE when the kingdom of Israel is established, united with one king. They must have developed some kind of legislative governance by this time. And so what the suggestion here is that all they've done when they came to write Exodus is they've taken the laws by which they were operating and write them back into this story to make it look like it came directly from God. Because then the king of Israel can lead according to these laws and say, hey, look, these are God's laws. It is possible. That is the way things happened often in the ancient Near East. You would baptize your ideas with a divine flavor, as it were, and then how can you argue against it? But those represent the two poles of the argument, 100% God or 100% human. There, of course, are many nuanced positions in between. And let me give you one that I think is probably more likely the case. This is my opinion. Moses went up onto Mount Sinai, and he spent that month and a half doing things that have been proven to be spiritual practices for thousands of years of human history, back then and even today. Then Moses spent that month and a half thinking, all right, I am leading this people now as we are going from slavery. We're supposed to go to another land and be established as a nation. Okay, God, what do I do? How is this supposed to work? And he spends time in prayer and in silence, in solitude, perhaps fasting as well, meditation, trying to contemplate what the divine presence that was always promised to be there would want him to do, how it is that God might speak into this situation. And I think that through that month and a half spent in that spiritual plane of endeavoring to understand the will and purpose of Yahweh, God is speaking to his heart, and he begins to write these things down to deliver them to Israel. This is not unlike things that we talk about today. When we are encountering a challenging decision that we have to make, which way do I go? Oftentimes we begin to pray. Lord, what would you have me do? And then we endeavor to hear God's voice in a manner of speaking so that we can make the decision thinking, this is what God has for me to do. We might even want to write that down as a reminder. Or maybe we're speaking with somebody else who's going through a difficult time and they're asking, you know, for our support and our help. And then we might think, okay, God, how can I be your voice to this person? How can I give the words of life? That's how we're going to end our service. We who have heard the Spirit's voice give light to others. Something like that is how it's said. And so we're thinking, all right, I think God might be saying to you that this is the way we should go. I think something like that was happening in that month and a half that Moses spent on Sinai. And so it's a combination of Moses and God together putting this whole thing in place and him now giving it to Israel, which then gives room for Ezekiel to come up later on and say, Okay, actually, Moses got that one wrong, okay? God isn't going to punish your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren because you're an idiot. That's not going to happen. No, you are going to deal with your own sin, and your son will deal with his own sin, and your grandson will deal with his own sin, and so on and so on. And then when Jesus shows up later and says, you have heard that it was said, and he refers to the Torah, and he says, but I say to you, we can understand why there would be a corrective. It's not that God is changing his mind or operating differently or being a different God altogether, but it's because Jesus is better in tune with God and understanding what it is that is supposed to be done. That's why he says in the gospel today, I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. He has to say that because it looks like he's saying, get rid of the Torah. He's saying, no, I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm trying to get you to understand is we need to fulfill what the Torah is about, which is a curious answer. And that's what the bottom line is for us today. As it was for Israel, the following of the Torah was about being the people that they were to be as God's treasured possession, as the people of Yahweh, as that priestly kingdom, as that holy nation set apart. It goes right back to that covenant with Abraham. Through you, all the nations of the world shall be blessed. Israel was to be a people living in a way that sets them apart, that they would be a blessing to the nations around them, that their whole purpose for embracing the spirit of the Torah was to be the people who demonstrate the character of God. And so it is with us. We fulfill the Torah when we understand what the prophet Micah was saying. Because Micah had said to the people of Israel, look, stop it with your sacrifices. I've had it up to here with your sacrifices, Yahweh says. But the people would say, yeah, but it's in the Torah. That's what we're supposed to do. And Micah says, yeah, but you're missing the point. What God requires of you is to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. When that is being done, Torah is being fulfilled. And when we embrace that understanding, we who have inherited this call of Israel, we who are now participants in God's intention from Abraham through to Moses and all the way down, when we see that we are to govern ourselves as ones through whom the world is blessed, then it makes it quite clear. It makes sense that we're going to live differently than others do. It makes sense there's going to be practices that we do that aren't just like everybody else. It makes sense that we are going to be living with a different focus than just everyone else does. Because our focus is to be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation, which is exactly what the New Testament says we are to be. Let that resonate in your mind as to why the Exodus is so important. We share that story for that purpose, for that role, for that function, to be a blessing to others. Amen.